Exhibition number 11922, reel 3.
This is VV Jenkins, reel 3. Was there anything about being in the desert that you actually liked?
No, there was nothing there that you liked, but at times, when there was a lull on, when there was no fighting going on, it was peaceful, quiet, it was like a cemetery. It was that peaceful and quiet, and perhaps if the weather was good, if it was about 3 months of the year, they have bad weather, hailstones and rain and what have you. But apart from that then, there were times there, it was, well, you couldn't say you enjoyed it, but it was very peaceful, not a breath of wind and nothing, beautiful sun, blue skies, and they were there with their cronies, with their mates, like, see, but there was nothing there to entertain you, or nothing at all, absolutely nothing. And they'd say, grub is up, so you'd go up and grab, you were expecting or something, you might have what we call bully and spuds. Now the potatoes, it was the dried potatoes, and starting off they were a dirty brown, but as the years were going on, they were coming more whiter. I suppose they were getting more experience, so they see, coming more whiter, so they were a bit palatable, you know, but well, that and bully beef, perhaps onion chucked in, that's the type of food he was having.
Onion what?
Just onion and bully beef, which is corned beef, and it would be in a tray, chucked in what we call, what's the name of the stoves you used to have now? A stove you made yourself out of the sand and muck and what I call, you know, just and you used to burn oil and water on a drip plate, on a red hot plate. And the oil and water was in two little tanks like that, and they'd have two pipes coming off, they were all made by the army, and as they were splashing on the hot plate, it would cause a flame, see. So I remember we went back to Benghazi.
Just before you go and leave the desert, can I ask you about health? Did you remain fit in the desert, or did you fall sick?
Well, put it this way then, there were times there, and it was really pathetic. There were times there when it was soldiers with dysentery, and you didn't know where the ambulance station was, the field ambulance. You didn't know where they were. Things are moving quick, moving fast, and before you would be allowed to come down to base, you'd have to have your head off. Understand me? They treated, and the most important thing out there at that time was what they call acriflavine. It's like a yellow iodine. And that was, and the bandages we had, I think they were from India. There was that frail stuff. You couldn't bandage anything up because it was fraying, you see. It was pathetic. And at one time I had a whittler. I think the mark is there now on there. Up in North Africa, this was.
In your finger.
In my finger. The mark is there now. And it was, I was in agony. So, I tell you about illnesses now. So I report sick. So they sends me to a field hospital. When I goes get to the field hospital, I think he was a Jewish medical officer. And he said, oh, it's not quite ripe yet. He said, you'll have to come back in a few more days, like, see. And I was, my God, I was in agony. So after the few more days, I went there now. And it's just in a tent it was at all. And they put, Squoze froze it and lanced it. And what a relief. What a relief. Anyway, at one time, when we come back to base, in Mina camp, I was laying on the floor. I couldn't remember nothing. So I just faintly remember. The officer came in and he said, "What's the matter with Driver Jenkins?" He's gone, we don't know. They said he just collapsed by there. Now, what had happened, I'd had sandfly fever, you see, and my temperature was 104, which is very dangerous, actually. So they took me to number 5 South African hospital, which was just outside Cairo. And I was there for about 3 weeks, and I couldn't open my eyes. I was it's a sleepy sickness, it is, see? You sleep and you can't open your eyes or nothing. But it could be dangerous, you see. Now, scorpions. I got stung with a scorpion. Now, scorpions out there, you've got a yellow one and a black one. Now, I have never known or heard of anybody dying from a scorpion sting. Now, who knows what a scorpion is, eh? It stings you with its point of the tail. Now, I'd washed a shirt in petrol, and I'd put it now on an old board to dry, like a bit of a piece of wood, like sort of thing. So I got to put the shirt on now, see? So I grabs out of the shirt I got, and a scorpion got me, and he stabs me by there.
On your thumb?
Just on the base of the nail. So I thought, my God, my arm went numb now, see? I thought, this is the way to go now. See, this is in my mind, see.
Was this a black one? Or
yes, a black one. A black one. Well, what had happened, I had to report sick, and they put my hand in magnesium potash. You see? And that sort of eased it, like, see? But as for anybody dying from it, I have never heard of it. I don't think the sting is that severe that it would kill you. See?
Do the yellow ones sting you?
Well, same thing, yes, but they reckon that the black one is the more severe. And what we used to do out there, we used to have a scorpion spider, and we used to have the scorpion, and we'd make a ring of petrol. Any amount of petrol, I'll tell you about the petrol cans now. And we used to make a ring, set the ring afire, and put the scorpion and the spider to fight each other in. What could you do if you're trying to get a bit of enjoyment?
They were poisonous spiders as well.
Oh, poisonous spider, yes. Now, when we were first out there, the type of petrol can we had was a 4-gallon tin plate can. Shiny tin plate. You know what I mean? Shiny tin plate is like a mirror. When the sun was shining, that would shine on there, and it would be like a mirror. So if he come over, we've had a few petrol dumps attacked anyway. So what they did now, our authorities, they patented their own jerry can. Now the jerry can is what the Germans use, right? But the type of lid that we made, or the British authorities made, it wasn't the oval type, the smooth type, so that when you put in petrol in, it would run out smooth. They made a round one, which was hopeless, actually. It was no good. It, when it was pouring the petrol out, it was going all over the shop. In the end, they made the jerry can exactly the same as the jerry one. They hold roughly about 4¾ gallons. Now, the petrol can, see, they used to finish them and throw them away, which is a waste for a start. You know, you're just wasting stuff, aren't you?
Just coming back to your water supply, if you were so short of water, did that mean you got verminous?
Well, yes. Down below, you had what they call crabs, fleas. You did have them, and you had to shave the air off. It's obvious, isn't it? You can't wash. People, we went down to a place called Fuka. Are you on now?
Yes.
Fouka, to collect water in 2-gallon cans. And whilst we were down there, we goes in for a swim, which is in the Mediterranean. And they talk about the lovely Mediterranean. We walks out so far, and we attempt to swim in, and we had a terrible job trying to swim in because of the currents. Now then, we was at the base camp once, a place called Geneva. It's a big army base. You've got the huge British bases in Egypt, the Geneva, Tahag, Telagabia, Balwa, all army camps, which is nothing but huts and tents. And you've heard of the Great Bitter Lake, have you?
Yes.
That is the wide part of the Suez Canal where the ships can pass each other. Remember now?
Yes.
The Suez Canal is like that, and you get the wide part then where ships can pass, you see? And there was a cruiser out in the Great Bitter Lake. Now, we didn't know who was on it or what, but apparently it was Churchill, Stalin and Roosevelt. And also, now we didn't know that they were meeting here on that cruiser. We didn't know. But it have come to light since. And also, near the pyramids was what they call the Mena House Hotel. They also met there. You don't know why they were there, right? But you've learned this since, see? And
whilst you're out in the desert, did you come across Arabs wandering about in the desert?
They called Bedouins, but only so far in. You see, I mean, the Bedouins operate well nearer the side of the sea, you know, but we are right deep, nearly down to Sudan. Actually, that's where we're operating. You see, now we had the SAS. But they were called in the Long Range Desert Group. Now they were operating in the desert, but miles behind the enemy lines. And at one time, they made a raid on Rommel's HQ, and they just missed him. Now they used to come through our camp, and they dressed in Arab clothes, if you like, dressed anyhow. But they were the SAS, but they were called the LRDG, the Long Range Desert Group. See. And because they played a big part, because their job, as you know, is to get information or make a raid on certain things, in any information, send it back to the top dog, see? And
how were the Long Range Desert Group regarded by the rest of the army?
Oh, brilliant. We knew that the job they were doing was really good, you know, because the distance they were travelling, for a start, they had these pickup trucks, you know, and the distance they were travelling, hundreds of miles out of the way. And they would be out there now for weeks on end. And they nearly captured Rommel at one time.
Now, I interrupted your story with you leaving the Middle East. I think you said...
Oh, yes. We, I'm the other side of Bengal now. So we have a little bit of celebration. Now, I'm not a boozer. I'm not a drinker. But we had a night. I know I'm going the next morning. And we had a night now, all of us together, in Benghazi. And we had Canadian beer, Black Horse Canadian beer. Now, talking about beer, mind, I'll come back to something else now. So the next morning, now I'm under the weather a bit, see. Kept calling me, you know, Peter, come on, you're going home today, sort of thing. Oh, and I said, I'm not bothered, like, see. Because don't forget this, mate. You've got to look at it this way. Tension-wise, worry-wise, you know you've left a young wife behind, 18 years of age. You knew with these millions of troops in Britain. All this was playing on your brain, see. It's got to. And we used to receive newspapers from abroad about the way the women was carrying on in this country with the blacks, with the Yanks, with any nationality. People that you never thought butter would melt in your mouth, you see. So all them was building up into tension. We have known people to break their hearts out there, It was really heartbreaking. So anyway, I come now. I'm on a vehicle now coming down. The rail head, what we call a rail head, it used to end at a place called Fort Capuzzo. Then the New Zealanders extended it then to Tobruk. You see, the rail head. When we used to come on leave from the desert, you had to work your leave that we didn't, but the authorities did, that if the moon was out, you'd travel in daytime. If the moon wasn't out, you'd travel at night time. By rail car now, not trains, ordinary vans, you see? And anyway, I come in down now by a lorry to Tobruk. Now then, we got a report sick now for inoculations, vaccination. Now, I had three, and they weren't taken. It's in my pay book in there. They weren't taken. So I said to the corporal in charge, now I said, oh, mark it successful, I said. And he did. So we comes down to base now, Geneva. Now, when we are down there, we're doing guard duty, keeping you on your toes that you've not gone slobbocky, like, see. And doing fire drill and guard duty, which is wasn't severe, but it's making you're still responsible for yourself, sort of thing, see. So the time comes now for me to embark on the ship. Now then, we embark on the train at Geneva to go all the way up to Port Said. Port Said we call it, but they call it Port Said, the Arabs. Now then, I've just come back from all that distance, 1,000 miles most probably. But I had to come down to base for them to carry on with the details of certain things, you see. It had to be done. So we embarked on the boat called the Almanzora. That's the name of the boat we come on. Bit better than the Egra. It was a cargo boat, actually. And we now set sail from Port Said. We stopped at Algiers. Not allowed ashore. We got military police ashore. We weren't allowed to step ashore. It was only a short stay anyway. So we come in through the Med, and we picks up a convoy at Gibraltar. Now we picks up an escort also there. And now we comes now across the Bay of Biscay, and we arrives in Scotland. Now we had two destroyers with us, and when we come in through the boom, the destroyers drop depth charges now to make sure there's nothing following us in, because it's 1945 now, see, the war's still on the continent, see, understand?
45 or 43?
45, I'm coming home. That's the length of time, the 4 years and 9 months out there. Remember 1940, I was telling you. So it's 45, I'm coming home whilst the war is still on the continent. So he arrives now, comes in through the boom in Scotland. The destroyer drops a couple of depths out in case there's anything following us in, see. We comes down the Clyde, all past the shipbuilding yards. Now it's night time now. We arrive, I think it's called the King George the Fifth. I think so, mine. Always waiting for us. No thousands of people like O'Muir. The civilian helpers in the army, you know, women's voluntary service, something like that. And what do? They answer us. We get off the ship, goes through the warehouse for there, onto the train. They hand us two sandwiches, don't they? To eat on the train. No, that's the welcome home we had, see? Now, we get down to Leeds, That was our receiving base. That's the RASC receiving base. Now then, all RASC personnel off the train by ya. Jumped off the train. We'd taken out into accommodation which had been taken over by the army, civilian houses, private houses taken over by the army. Right, we stays there. In the morning, we got a report to call a company office for to see if we went if we went any more kit, any renewal of the kit, you'll pass for the train. You're going home now. You're going home after 5 years. Now, when we are leaving Leeds railway station, we see some Italian soldiers sweeping up on the station. Now, there's nothing more sickening than to see that. They've been there all the time, no doubt living in a lap of luxury. And so, shouted a few words to him. So, my comes home now to Swansea.
You shouted a few words of abuse to them.
Yes, Italiano soldato, a chocolate soldier, you know, chocolato soldato. Where is it? You was bitter, see.
Did they respond?
No, no. And the funny thing about it, when we in that party to capture the to fetch the captured vehicles back in Benghazi, in Siribarani, there's a lorry there, Lancia, solid tyres. So officer said to me, start that one up, he said, and take it, see. So when I goes to the door now, I opens the door of the lorry, and there's three bottles of what I thought was lemonade, Tisano Bianco sort of stuff, see. And I'm just going to get one of them out now. And I could see it was wired up. It was wired up to a detonator. See? That's a
trap.
Yes, booby trap, see? So that was that. So the infantry was still there mopping up now, see? And you had these Italians now like this. Me no understand he to our infantry, see? And the officer was there with them. And of course, he'd probe them now with a bayonet, see? Different equipment now, see, he had to dismantle it. And we goes now through the trenches in Siribarani, right? Now, there was a lot of Libyans there. Not much good as soldiers, but they were there, see? And also Italians. There was mutilated, there was terrible mess in them. But see, the religion, the Catholics, see, they would have a photograph or a postcard which have come from Italy with an artillery gun on, and the Virgin Mary on it as well. They were all that, see. That's they can sing. And women and singing, that's it. That's great for them, see? But for fighting material, they've nothing. That's what gets me now with this common market country. Who've you got there? You've got the Germans, aye. That's right. You've got the Germans, and that's about all.
So the Italian POWs were handed over to the Libyans?
No. The Italian soldiers were there in the trenches with the Libyans. The Libyans now, it's Libya, what we're talking about now, Siribarani, it's Libya. You know, you've got Saloum, which is part of Egypt, then you've got no man's land, then you're coming into Libya now, aren't you? See? Well, that is the defence, that was the defence of Libya, the trenches there, but you had Libyan soldiers, and you had Italian soldiers, or Italian officers, see? But you know, the idea was, they stuck them there, didn't they? They stuck them there, right in the front, like, see?
So Kill. The Italians were using the Libyans.
Yes, yes, that's right, yeah.
So who did this mutilation?
Our people. Shooting, I mean, not killed with the war, like, you know, with cannon fire and bullets. They were, you know, they weren't, it wasn't a very pretty sight, like, see. But what it is, you were starting off now, and you were showing no mercy, like, see, you were just going through, see. We don't know what capabilities they were then. See, this is the first part of the war, see.
Was that in Wavell's advance, you mean?
That's in Wavell's lot, yes. That's the early part, yeah.
Now, I interrupted you with you returning home from Leeds railway station.
Yeah, when we come home to Leeds. Oh, prior to that now, I suppose I can drop back, can I?
Yes.
Can you remember they started putting beer in cans? And they were issuing out the troops in the Middle East with two cans of beer each. 1942. I got it in there on the photograph, 1942, two cans of beer, and it come from Ballinvoil Brewery, Llanelli. That's when they first started putting the beer in the cans. Now, they talk about all these gifts and all that, and all these concerts, parties that are supposed to be entertaining the Middle East troops. We never seen nothing of it, nothing at all. We had no entertainment, only what we made ourselves. The presents and the things that women Omiya was making, woolly comforts and all, nothing. Nothing at all. You know, we are talking about the very early part of the war. Now, that war had been on 2 years out there, you see. And things, I mean, it was taking 6 months for a letter to get home. And sometimes the letters was arriving home either soaking wet or burnt. They've been attacked. You understand me now?
Yes.
I mean, my people home didn't know nothing at all about us. Didn't know nothing at all. Of course, there was a few Swansea boys. One boy's in school with me. And then another boy, at present, he's working now. He's got a business up in Cockett, Hooper Bedding Works. Perhaps you've heard of them. Hooper Bedding, they do bedding work, like, you know. I talked to him the other day anyway. Another boy from the Sandfields. Another boy then, Aubrey Bates from Uptown Hill. He's passed away now. But Percy Stoats, Aubrey Bates, Gilbert Hooper, and Ari Guttridge, they still with us, they are. Now, we used to hear about the bombing of Swansea, and not Swansea, a South Wales town. That's how it used to come over, because our wireless is there, the Naffy wagon, it was Tupney wireless, you know, the early part of the war, innit? And all we could go there was to listen to the news, perhaps 9 o'clock at night. And they used to listen, they used to say about a South Wales town had been bombed. Now, we didn't know which one it was. They would never tell you, because if they told you it was Swansea, what's going to happen? You're going to say to yourself, my God, is it my family? You see? Anyway, we arrived in Swansea at midnight. And the funny part about it, my sister had got married during the war to a Liverpool sailor. Now, I never knew nothing at all about this. And it's obvious that he was on the same train as me coming home. Because when I walked into, not my home now, which I had left for, because that's gone for a burden. By 6 months marriage, that was gone for a burden. Into my mother's house in the same street, you see. Because in them days, you see, it was two rooms he was having.